I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Dream Job Ready. My name is Dane Sharp. I'm your host. And my guest for this episode is Michelle Grace Hunder, one of Australia's most revered music photographers. Michelle broke into professional photography about a decade ago and has played an integral role in documenting, promoting, and showcasing Australian music, especially Aussie hip-hop and Australian female musicians. She's photographed hundreds of Australian and international artists, from intimate personal portraits with the likes of Raekwon and Miguel, album covers for Briggs and Camp Cope, and dozens of live concerts and festivals. She should actually be on tour with young superstar artist Rule right now, but the COVID-19 crisis has obviously hit Michelle and her industry hard, with most events, gigs and live music put on hiatus indefinitely. Instead, Michelle joins me for this interview via Zoom from her home in Melbourne, where she's busy proactively reacting to the COVID-19 isolation situation. Michelle's taken to Twitch to run photography workshops every week, and I encourage you to check them out if you're chasing a career in music photography. Her handles are in the podcast description. I really enjoyed this chat with Michelle, and this episode is packed with value. She shares plenty of honest advice about making it in photography. She talks about the hard work, the long hours, and the need to self-motivate. She shares advice about time management and how to best juggle work, travel, business, and a home life. She discusses what it's like working with and for musicians and celebrities, and the importance of reading the room, respecting the artist, building relationships, and the importance of trust. You're going to get a lot of value out of this episode, regardless of the dream job you're chasing. So let's get into it. This is Dream Job Ready with photographer Michelle Grace Hunder.
Please note that the opinions of guests are their own and not those of the companies they have worked for.
G'day, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining me on the Dream Job Ready podcast. Here we are recording this via Zoom, given the current COVID-19 situation. But alas, I know this is going to be a really good interview, so thank you for joining me.
No worries. We're practicing good social distancing right now.
Yeah, 100%. Given the scenario we're in, we're obviously both well-versed in online conference calls and digi communication, so I think we'll be fine. Look. First up, just wanted to ask, how are you and how are you dealing with this current situation? It's rocked the world and specifically has really rocked the industry you work in.
Yeah, it really has actually. For me personally, I think I was a little bit better mentally prepared than some of my colleagues and friends. I had basically a month's work cancelled a little while back. We were touring to Asia on a tour with an artist that I work with, Rule, and that was basically all of March. And then so we found out, I reckon maybe, it must have been the start of February that wasn't going ahead. That particular tour, we would have had to go into China and then they had implemented, I think, a travel ban at that stage. So if you went into China, you couldn't get out. So at that stage, we had to basically cancel that tour. It's been postponed to September. So, you know, I was already faced with a month that I had been booked for that completely disappeared overnight. And I was kind of scrambling to fill that gap. And luckily for me, I don't rely on just, gig and tour work. I do press shots with musicians and artists as well. So I was able to basically fill in that gap with press shots. So I was okay up until, pretty much this week, I think. And then everything started to really gain a bit of momentum in Australia. And I just personally just started postponing all of my shoots and just saying, I would like to practice a bit of kind of as much self-isolation as possible. I was very across what was going on. I'm very connected on Twitter, and I was very aware of the situation and probably taking it a lot more seriously here than a lot of people were earlier. So I just started to push shoots, and most people were really understanding.
Even at that point, did it seem like it was just that was that part of the tour that was was going to have to be postponed and just back to work, back to usual elsewhere?
Yes, definitely at that time. So that would have been like late January, early February. And people that I told were like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. It was in China. So, of course, that had been cancelled. It really, the worldwide impact definitely wasn't known, I think, at that point. It was only a couple of weeks later when it really started to hit Italy. And then I think for me personally, I started to think, yeah, this is, I can see where this is heading and it's not good. I don't know if anyone could have predicted the just absolute kind of decimation of every industry. I'm in the music industry, so I feel like concerts really started to cancel really early. I had friends calling me saying my next kind of 6 to 8 months work is gone, especially those who are predominantly just shooting concerts and gigs. That's looks like for the foreseeable future, that's not going to go ahead. So yeah, it's just wild. I mean, we've never seen anything like this in our lifetime. For me personally, my brain has just gone into overdrive and what am I going to do? And starting to think of innovative ways that I can stay connected. And that's kind of what I'm planning over the next couple of weeks, is to start a Twitch stream and live streaming either my editing process or mini workshops or doing Q&As, because I do get a lot of questions about, you know, how can I do what you do? And it's actually impossible to answer all those people. They come in so frequently now. So hopefully this is a platform that I can actually communicate to a lot of people, and they can watch videos and live streaming. I don't know how, I've never done anything like this. So it's like, it's kind of a bit exciting and terrifying all at the same time. But
I'll be sure to share those, the links to those sites in my description to help you out. And you know, I think it's interesting because, you know, obviously one of the hardest hit industries has been the creative industry, musicians, productions, theatre houses, et cetera, et cetera. But in some ways, you know, the opportunity that industry has is we are creatives, right? So it'd be very interesting to see how much, new and exciting and innovative stuff come out of this. And I've seen and been approached with, you know, partnerships and sponsorships through other work that I do around people that are hosting, you know, day events, live streaming, or doing, you know, starting to do live concerts, etc. So
I'm definitely seeing a lot of that myself. My Instagram has just been, the last couple of days especially, just consistently people going live on Instagram and bringing people in for chats or doing live concerts or it's kind of pretty amazing. It's like, you know, there was a John Legend concert from his room, you know, his house the other day, and his wife is sitting on the piano and I think people will get really creative. I think the tricky part for us is, like, I have no doubt that we can be creative and we can stay connected, is how we're going to earn an income. That's the tricky part. So and at this stage, you know, all of the stimulus packages they're talking about are completely ignoring our sector, and because most of us are sole traders or contractors, there's no kind of help in sight at the moment. I mean, hopefully that changes, but there's a lot of people that are going to be in a really, really rough situation very, very soon. So hopefully we can just band together as a community and really help each other. And I think the most important thing is the lines of communication and talking. And if you need a hand, you know, sticking your hand up and saying you need help. But really rough. But we're trying to remain positive, like I said, I'm trying to use my anxious energy to create new stuff, so see how we go.
No, exactly right. And, you know, I'm looking forward to some of that stuff you produce. And you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the Dream Job Ready podcast is, you know, I think your story through photography and you know, what you've been able to achieve since picking up the camera and starting this part of your career is phenomenal. And that's really what I want to focus on today. I was definitely keen to explore, you know, some of the challenges and difficulties that do come up. Probably none have maybe felt as extreme as right now, but you know, for any budding photographer out there or someone that's starting to get into content creation, I'd love us to discuss a little bit of that. So why don't we just sort of jump pre-coronavirus, you know, BCV. What was keeping you busy? What was your dream job, you know, a few months ago before the world got rocked?
Yeah, it's so funny because I really feel like in terms of like my setting up my career and doing exactly what I wanted to do, it really had clicked in for me in the last probably 2 years. So I'm a professional music photographer, probably gathered that by now, but basically what keeps me busy is press shots, album covers, those types of shoots for artists, as well as shooting live gigs and concerts. So I probably, the balance over the years has been interesting. It probably started off doing more gigs and then going into more press shots. And then recently, because I've been working really closely with Rule, I've been doing a lot more touring with him, which has always been my dream from the start. I really wanted to be a tour photographer and on the road a lot. And that has really kind of come into fruition over the last 2 years. So, yeah, traveling the world, taking photos for an artist that I adore and like genuinely love his music and have been working with him since he was like 13. So watching his rise as well and being involved with a team that are my best friends. So it's quite literally the dream job for me. Like everything about, you know, from the minute that I wake up is just been, yeah, incredibly, I've been incredibly blessed and I'm very grateful for all of the opportunities that have happened in, especially the last couple of years. Yeah.
So let's get into the guts of how you got this job. And I'm sure it's not a one sentence answer. Yeah, this is a lot of hard work, some luck, some probably some lessons, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I'll throw it to you wherever you want to start us off from, should I say. Let's talk through, you know, for everyone out there that, and there'd be millions that would love to be, you know, Rule's personal photographer. How did we get here? Yeah, how'd you get there?
Yeah, it's such a weird story. So, like, I guess my background is I studied sports science at university. I thought I was going to be like a physio and working in sport. Like, I was obsessed with basketball as like a teenager. So, yeah, that's what I studied at university. I ended up actually working in sports marketing for quite a few years. And I remember when I was 21, I got a job in the marketing department for the NBL. And I literally thought, this is it. Like, this is my dream. Like, I've reached my dream. It can't get any better than this. And then 18 months later, I was actually made redundant. The NBL office moved and, you know, early on, I realized that, you know, your dreams can be taken away from you like pretty quickly. So I ended up working in AFL, worked for Melbourne Football Club for 4 years and kind of navigated that from a marketing position and then through to events. I was the event manager there for about a year. And then I left and started doing just kind of corporate events for quite a few years. I kind of pivoted after a little while and did some film production stuff. So I was working behind the scenes on some pretty major films like Charlotte's Web and there was a Spielberg series that I don't know why I can't think of it at the moment, but The Pacific, 10-part Spielberg series. So I did a few kind of big films and then I think the pathway to photography, basically what happened is I had my own dance production company, which started in around 2010, which was Australia's first independent dance production company. And it was this really incredible time to be involved and some really great people involved in getting this production on the stage. But what happened there is, a very hard business lesson happened, and that business basically fell overnight. We were told we were in a lot of debt, and the business went into liquidation, and basically everything again was just like, you know, carpet pulled out from under you. Like, sure. We personally, my husband and I personally actually lost a lot of money in that business. We'd invested in that business, and I'd gone from this incredible high of, you know, seeing this production come onto stage, and it was touring Australia and it was doing really well, really rave reviews. And then all of a sudden it was like into liquidation. So
can I ask why? Can you talk to what happened? Like, what did you learn from that?
It's such an interesting story. So there was, you know, there was three directors, myself. I was the head of kind of the production side. We had a person responsible for the legal, and then we had a person responsible for accounts. My biggest lesson for that is you definitely need to be across everything in business. I wasn't across the accounts, and so I got told by the accounts person that, that we were not going to be making enough money for what we'd spent, and basically her budgeting had been completely wrong. And I hadn't had any experience with a business like that. And, you know, from my perspective, what I had done had all gone to plan. So it's just one of those really hard business lessons that you learn. And I think for me personally, I just need to be across everything now. And I think that's why I really thrive in a business like that, that I am responsible for everything. And there's the kind of buck stops with me, if that makes sense. So I can work as hard as I want, or there's no one else to blame if I fail now.
Sure.
So basically what happened in that period of, I guess the closest that I've come to depression, I don't think I actually went into a dark depression, but I definitely felt like it could have been close at one point. Basically what happened was my husband bought me a camera for Christmas that year. So he had noticed that I liked taking photos at parties, and I liked documenting things more than, I didn't really see myself as a photographer. I just really liked to, I guess, remember events.
Yeah.
And he'd really noticed that. So, yeah, he bought me a camera. I guess just at the right time, and I threw myself into it, and it kind of just clicked really quickly. Like, I went professional within kind of 6 months. I kind of set up a business, told everybody that this is what I was doing. I had incredible support from my friends. All of my friends were getting married around that time, and all of them were like, yeah, you can totally shoot our wedding, which is wild to me now, because like I'd literally just started. So I had a lot of friends that were just putting a lot of faith in me, and giving me an opportunity to learn really, really quickly. And within 6 months I'd kind of gone professional. And I guess the music photography started quite quickly as well. I knew an artist named Briggs, who's from Shepparton, and that's where I'm from. So he had got in contact with me. I hadn't seen him for like, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years. And he got in contact and he told me he was a rapper. And I was like, whatever, sure. And then he sent me his music and I was just blown away and was just like, holy shit, I can't believe that there's music like this coming out of Australia. Like, I've always been a massive hip hop fan and quite connected to, I guess, the hip hop community, but I wasn't really aware of the stuff happening in Australia, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So I just became really passionate about documenting hip hop in Australia. So basically the first probably 3 or 4 years of my career were going to hip hop gigs and just making sure everybody knew who I was and just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting. I would have shot like, I don't know, 200 gigs.
For free or paid or both?
Yeah, for free. I was just rocking up at everything. I was just making sure that people knew who I was and being part of the community and giving back and just being present and just documenting everything that was happening at that time. And I guess the next big step from there is that I kind of made a goal for myself. I was like, I want to be Australia's most well-known hip-hop photographer. And so the way that I thought that I could do that was by working one-on-one with artists. So I was like, okay, they need to know who I am. Like, it's not good enough just to go to shows because, you know, there might be three or four other photographers there, but I actually want to get a personal relationship with them.
Yep.
So I made a list of, I think it was like 10 artists that I wanted to work with, and just started like contacting them saying, hey, I'm doing this portrait series on Australian hip hop. Would you be keen to work with me? And it just kind of grew from there. And so I had 10 on the list. It ended up being a 2-year personal project that I ended up turning into a book, which is my first kind of project that came into fruition. It was called Rise and was released in 2014. And I worked with like 182 people.
Wow.
So it really, I guess, cemented myself in not only the Australian hip hop scene, I guess, it was like the broader music community at that point. There was a lot of people that knew who I was after that release. And I really felt like then that was like, okay, I can call myself a music photographer. This is what I'm doing. And yeah, it's kind of gone from there.
That's crazy, right? And you know, flashback to, you know, those 200 odd gigs that you were rocking up at, as you say, you know, without giving away all your trade secrets, you know, how were you doing that? Were you just walking in, buying a ticket? Were you contacting event organizers? Were you contacting the musicians?
Yeah, I'd contact the musicians. It's really interesting because I kind of, because I didn't know what I was doing, I didn't know there was like a way that you were meant to do stuff. So I was contacting artists direct, and I was using Twitter a lot to do that. And obviously having a great response rate, and people were like, yeah, sure, come along and shoot. It's fine, you know. And there were smaller gigs too. So like, you know, the gigs would probably be between 50 and 150 people. So it wasn't like often, you know, there's this big protocol. But then I was starting to shoot larger gigs. So say there might be an artist that was supporting an international artist, so that might be a bigger show that you're shooting at a festival hall or something like that. And that's when I started to become aware, I guess, of there is kind of a protocol sometimes, and that you are meant to go through publicists and shoot for publications, and there's all this other kind of avenue. But for me personally, I always wanted to work for Artist Direct, and I think it's the way that I've been able to navigate a really solid career for myself. I haven't what most photographers do is they start working for publications don't pay, so they get in this weird kind of eternal cycle of just working for online publications and, you know, progressing 5, 6, 7 years and not being able to transfer that into a career or into where they're earning income. So yeah, it was a bit of an accident, but like now, like my main thing is trying to mentor young people coming through to say like there is actually another way. It could be, it's kind of a bit harder. I think you definitely need to have better interpersonal relationships with artists and have those connections in the industry, but it's better from a long-term perspective if you want to be doing this as a career rather than going down online publication and working for free for your entire existence.
Sure. And now that you you know, have that great connection with so many different artists, and I guess are on the inside now, you know, conversely to when you started, what advice and what mentoring do you give younger people that are trying to get that start, or how would you tell them to approach an artist, a band, a publicist, I guess, the right way?
Yeah, this is the hardest thing to teach, I think, because a lot of it's actually quite organic. Like a lot of it is just like, I was just working with my friends. And, you know, I was going to shows and making friends with those people and then, you know, meeting other people and then they would be like, oh, you should come shoot our show. And it did really happen quite organically. And it's a very hard thing to teach, to say you just need to be friends with everybody. Because at the end of the day, I mean, that's essentially what networking is really. without that weird kind of corporate language. It's like essentially people that like you and want to be around you but want to hire you at the same time. So, a lot of that, for me, the advice is to actually really make yourself part of the community. So going to events, going to lots of shows, making friends with lots of people, and then making them aware of what you do as well. And, you know, people used to joke about my hustle game all the time, but I was like on it. Like I was, you know, and like I do feel like it was in an organic way and I was just trying to make friends and be part of that community, but it really worked for me to be a person that, people wanted at the show to hang out and also take some photos. So yeah, it's a real tricky one to just say, just be friends with everybody. But sure. At the end of the day, like I think you find most industries are the same. Like it really is who you know. And the flip side of that is like when you get in those positions and you are given those opportunities, you really want to be good. So as it is about who you know, you really want to have honed your skills to a point that you need to be able to deliver when those opportunities come your way. So it's definitely not to say that it's just who you know. Like you want to be good because you want to get consistent repeat work. So you want to be able to deliver. So I just used, you know, those 200 shows that I was shooting, like they were really honing my skills on providing content in often pretty shitty venues, you know, like that. And that's one of the best things that has happened is, you know, even when I'm on tour now with Rule, and he's one of the biggest artists in Australia, if we go to Europe or go to America, especially like a couple of years ago, we weren't shooting in like massive venues. We were shooting in small venues, and I needed to rely on those skills that I got, you know, 7 or 8 years ago to be able to provide content that needs to go all over his social media, into his tour book. Like it needs to look like it's as good as the other shows that have really great lighting and, you know, people can shoot with their eyes closed. So all of the stuff that you learn at the start when you're doing those hard yards, they really do benefit you as you kind of progress in your career.
Of course. And I'm really glad you build on the whole, it's not what you know, it's who you know, because that's a huge truth. But to your point, and I was going to say it if you didn't, was it's also about what you do once you know that person, right, and what they know about you. You know, reliability, getting the respect of that person, being consistent, as you said. Look, let's talk about fear of failure, because and talk me through even when you were starting off with the wedding photography, because you kind of hinted at it there, or going into the first kind of paying gig is, you know, when you've got a camera, it's not that easy. You can't guarantee the lighting is going to be perfect. You can't guarantee you're going to forget to take the lens cap off sometimes. Talk about overcoming that, because I'm sure you've had a stuff up or two along the way.
Yeah, it's so funny. My husband and I have talked about this before. We're definitely both individuals that like fully back ourselves. We're a little bit like fake it till you make it. And I definitely at the start was like, there was an underlying anxiety, definitely. Like, I can't stuff this up. But I also just backed myself. I really did just back myself to be able to, if not deliver to the fullest extent, do the absolute best that I could in every opportunity. So I think the fear of failure is always there, but I've always been like the person that just says yes. Like if somebody asks me something, and even if I'm not sure if I can do it, I'll say yes. And I'll then do research for the next week. I'm like, how the hell am I going to pull this off? And work out, you know, do YouTube tutorials, or how am I going to light this, or do test shoots, or make sure that I am in a position that I can deliver to the best of my ability. But I'm definitely the person that is saying yes to stuff that scares the shit out of me. I think that I like being put in, being put outside my comfort zone, I guess. And that bit of anxiety for me, I know for some people is quite crippling. It's actually the opposite for me. That anxiety really drives me, and it really it's like this nervous tension that I have to learn or create or just use that energy to somehow navigate what the hell I'm doing. So yeah, it's definitely there, but I think I just use that in a different way than other people that I know that are quite, can be quite crippled by just self-doubt or confidence issues or whatever. I'm definitely of the opinion, just give it a crack.
Work it out later. And have you had any?
Yeah, work it out later. Yeah.
Have you had any big setbacks or anything that really knocked you on your ass and just went, oh, I'm gonna have to work through this or take a different step through this?
Trying to think of one that's happened. I can't think of a really, I can't think of anything that's like been a huge major setback since, I guess, the thing that happened before I picked up a camera. I feel like once I picked up a camera, for me, it was almost like, this is what I was meant to do. This is what I'm meant to be doing. So like, even if there were setbacks, it's like nothing major that would ever have got in the way of me trying to progress. Cause I feel like this is like, you know, like it feels like a life purpose thing. Like that's,
wow,
can sound really wanky, but it just, especially when I was doing the touring stuff, like I'm just like, this is what I've always wanted to do and what I've dreamed of doing for so long. And then when, you know, in that position and you are delivering, I felt like I was doing my best work at the end of last year, coming off a 3-month tour. So it just feels like all of those pieces had, you know, fallen into place after so many years of grinding and grinding and grinding. So yeah, I can't think of a specific like huge setback, but I'm sure there was heaps. And it was just about, you know, picking yourself up and continuing to be there. And like you said before, being really reliable, like that's for me, the biggest thing that I've always wanted in my career is to be reliable, consistent, you know, easy to contact, be the person if they need something at the last minute, I'll drop everything and do it. Like just be really present for your clients and they will appreciate it and they will come back to you, you know?
Yeah, that's great advice. And I could imagine working in, you know, this type of industry and, you know, you've got working with people of all different, fame statuses, it's important to, you know, really probably respect the people you're working with as much as anything as well, right? Whether that's their privacy or whether that's their working schedule.
Yeah. That's so true. And that the big word around that is trust.
Mm.
When you're working with people that are of, you know, whatever celebrity status, and they need to be able to trust you. Like you're coming into their inner sanctum. If, you know, there might be an international artist that I'm working for that I've never met before, that I'm literally in their circle of, you know, 20 people. And they need to know that, you know, you're not going to release stuff that you shouldn't release or, you know, make them look a certain way or that is so important for what we do. And it's definitely what I really strive for to show in my photographs is a level of trust with the artist. And I think that's something I really pride myself on is like, I can see it in somebody's eyes when they trust me. It's definitely a thing that you can see. They're allowing you into their life and they're allowing you to document that, to show people outside their circle. And it's really imperative that you respect that. And it's about knowing what people's boundaries are. Like I am constantly asking the artists that I work for, you know, permission to show certain photos and constantly running stuff by them and making sure they're okay or are comfortable with what I'm also showing from my end, because like the last thing I'd want to do is a photo out there that they don't want to be out there. Even though like legally they're my photos and I can do with them what I like, but like it's not about that. Like, and I think there's a lot of people, even in my industry, that completely forget this. And there's a lot of people that just, especially concert photographers, that just go and shoot concerts for publications that they don't have that relationship with artists. I constantly see photos that are posted that I'm like, that artist is not going to like that photo. And the only thing that that does is that reflects badly on you, because you, the artist is going to be like, well, I'm never going to hire that person because that's a shit photo of me. And there's like, again, it just goes into that trusting. It's like if other artists see it too and go, well, why would they post that photograph? That's a really unflattering photo of that person, or that's a bad angle, or that's capturing something that, you know, shouldn't be seen on the outside, or whatever it is. Like having that respect for artists, I think is imperative. And I know that there's people that vehemently disagree with me on this, that they think that it's all about documentation. And yeah, I'm the complete opposite. Artists are the first and foremost consideration. And I guess that's because I've worked so closely with them for, you know, nearly a decade. So I understand how they think and stuff that affects them mentally. And yeah, it's they need to be respected in that way, I think.
Yeah, no, and I think that carries across all photography and filmmaking as well, no matter whether it's sport or politics or, human nature, et cetera. There's obviously different medias or channels that are from the tabloid side probably trying to, actually crack that and kind of take that angle. But, you know, when you're working for a certain publication that's, there to support and amplify that artist or that sportsman or whatever, I think it's a really good piece of advice and something that's going to be critical, obviously, to keeping that person's respect or keeping that artist's, trust and reliability as well.
Totally, yeah.
When you're, I guess, first engaging with a new artist to work with, talking through what your routine is there, if someone is about to come over from overseas or you're going overseas to work with them, do you go into research mode and preparation mode? Sometimes you just have to wing it?
Yeah, most of it's winging it because, to be honest, a lot of it happens last minute in the music industry. So you might find out like the day of the show, or I generally don't do a lot of research. I try to be quite intuitive. I think I'm really good at reading the room as well. So usually it's if I walk in and I can sense an artist doesn't want me in a particular space or, you know, too close or whatever. It's kind of about like sounding out boundaries, and you can definitely speak to like the tour manager or people who are involved in what those boundaries are. And often they will word you up and just be like, okay, this artist is totally happy for you to be inside the dressing room, or this artist just wants you here and whatever. And then sometimes you have to just like totally sound it out. Like I am hyper aware of vibes, I think. Like I can definitely sense if there's a moment that I'm not meant to be in a room, I should remove myself, or I should be documenting it, or it's something I'm pretty aware of. That's just about respecting boundaries and trying to understand that it's really hard for artists to do what they do. Like they have an incredible job to, you know, psych themselves up to a point where they have to be completely vulnerable on stage and perform. And we just need to respect that. So definitely. And that just comes from just like making eye contact with the person or asking, are you cool with me to be in here? Or do you want me to bounce right now? Whatever it is. And just like, I think just understanding people in that situation. I think if you're a person that's not great with that, this might not be the best form of photography for you, or maybe just it is, you know, just shooting concerts for publications where you don't have as much kind of interpersonal relationships with the artists, because you definitely need to respect and be able to sense when, you know, you're wanted or not wanted.
That's a really good insight. So there's actually, you know, in your role and I guess in the work that you do, there's a lot of EQ as well as the IQ of knowing how to, use a camera and know the craft and know the technology. The actual EQ element is big time. Personal relationships, empathy for people.
I feel like the EQ is like actually more important. And it's actually really interesting. A really well-known concert photographer recently tweeted this and he got a lot of hate. He was kind of like, you know, taking photos is almost like the least important thing when it comes to touring with artists. And I completely agree with him. I think we absolutely need to be able to take a photo, but to be honest, most people can do that now. Like that technical part of photography is getting easier and easier. And there's a lot of kids coming through now that take really brilliant photos and can do what we do really well. What's harder to navigate is, yeah, really understanding artists, being super chill, and like on tour, like there's no routine. Like you have to be very much go with the flow. When I'm touring, I'm as a female touring with, you know, probably 8 or 9 dudes mostly, can be confined spaces on a tour bus. You can't be precious. Like you just need to like roll with the punches, go with the flow. Stuff can just change at the drop of the hat. Like you definitely can't be a person that's super particular. So all of those things like are just really, really important. If you were the type of person that was, you know, kicking up a fuss every 2 seconds because, I don't know, something happened and you're not getting, like we're like the least important people on a tour. So if we're not getting what we need, it's like, well, you just got to roll with it. So again, this is stuff that's really hard to teach. And it's probably why there's only not that many people doing what I do as a career, because it's actually a pretty tricky thing to teach. But it is possible. Like there are definitely people that are doing it. It's just learning how to navigate what's most important. And often it's like the technical skills of photography is not the most important thing.
No, that's great. That's great. And you know, I guess let's dig in a little bit further into the hard stuff, because every dream job, you know, has realities as well, right? Whether it's getting up early, traveling, being by yourself, etc. Like what's the other hard stuff?
Yeah, there's so much hard stuff. I mean, like, you know, 90% of what we do is not taking photos. Tell you that right now. There's like the reality of just the business stuff. So whether that is even just like accounting, or just being on top of your invoicing, or sitting at a desk editing thousands of photos, like that's the reality. It's even, you know, on tour you have to do that stuff really quickly, so not having a lot of time to finesse your work and being able to you have to get stuff out really quickly, turnaround times are really short. Definitely lack of sleep is it can be a thing if you're touring. Not much personal space, and being away from your loved ones for a long time. Like, you know, I was away nearly 3 months last year and was booked for upcoming pending coronavirus stuff, like, you know, quite a lot of touring coming up. So that's, you know, can be a huge strain on relationships, and depending on what people's personal relationships are like I'm so fortunate. I have the most incredible husband who's like actually loves his alone time. And
for context, your husband's creative as well, right? He's a video producer, editor, production man.
Yeah, filmmaker. So he travels a lot as well. So, but he's incredibly supportive of my career and is so, so stoked for me. But also is, you know, totally fine if I go away and need to go away for extended periods of time, and really supportive in that way. And, you know, that's not a reality for a lot of people. And the other thing is that we chose not to have children. Like that's when you're talking about kind of sacrifices for career and stuff, like it would be impossible doing what I'm doing right now if we had children. Like it just wouldn't be possible. One of us would need to be home, and most likely it would be me. So I definitely wouldn't be touring the world. So, you know, that's a thing that a lot of people, you know, most people want to have children. So, is that a reality of being able to tour 8, 9 months, whatever? It's probably not. So, for us, it was the right decision, and we're stoked, and we absolutely, you know, we've got our fur babies, and, I've got Jetta. She's here.
I think I heard one bark on before. Ah, oh, there you go. Super cute.
I've got Jetta on my lap. But, we have our dogs and we're very much in love with them. And, like, for us it was the right decision. And but, you know, that's not a reality for everybody. So making it work. And, again, this falls heavily detrimental for women.
Sure.
So it's another reason why you don't see a lot of female touring music photographers, it's like incredible sacrifice to be able to, or they're, you know, they're younger and they're doing it in their 20s and stuff. So, yeah.
I can only assume you and others that you've, other females that you've worked with have helped, you know, improve the gender balance, despite sort of some of the other stuff to work through as a woman or as a man in the profession. You know, do you believe, like, is that true? Is there more women coming into, you know, your type of professional photography now?
Yeah, it's so wild. When I started, like, almost 10 years ago, I didn't see any females. Like, it was just like, I'd go to a concert and then, I mean, also the genre that I was shooting kind of lends itself to being more male dominated anyway, because I was shooting hip hop at that stage. But even then, it was so rare to see another female photographer. And in the last 5 years, it's like absolutely exploded. Like, I now believe the best music photographers in the world are coming out of Australia. That we have just got such incredible talent. And we have a really, really supportive, engaged community as well. There's a group on Facebook that's just like female music photographers. And it's really supportive. It's a really great space for, you know, younger girls to ask for advice. Because what would happen often is that some of the bigger groups that were more male dominated, and a lot of older men that had been in the industry for a long time, really for some reason would be quite patronizing, or they would, you know, someone would ask a question and they would just shoot them down, and a lot of people just were too afraid to ask. They were also very insular with the advice that they gave. They wouldn't share things like rates or I'm like the exact opposite of that. I'm like an open resource to people that want any information, because I had to navigate this stuff and I had no idea what I was doing. I had to work out rates. I had to, you know, trial and error, you know, probably undercharge for so long and probably, you know, on the flip side, you know, might price yourself out while you're trying to like navigate what you're supposed to charge. So I'm like, I have an open door policy essentially for any young female music photographers that want to ask me questions, DM me at any time, any of that stuff, just because I didn't have that. So I'm really passionate about trying to teach as much as possible, because like there's enough work out there. It's just people haven't navigated on how to actually either ask for money or ask how much money, or it's just that constant thing as a creative. And I think females definitely struggle with this, is putting a value on their work, especially yep. young females that are in their, you know, early 20s. It's something that's super tricky. So yeah, again, just really passionate about just teaching that process, being confident in like, no, confident in your abilities. This is what I charge. I know that I'm worth this. If they say no, they say no. Yeah.
Is there, what's the question I want to ask you? Is there, if there was a little, you know, 20-year-old Michelle coming up, budding photographer, it looked like she had the glint in her eye, had the EQ skills, knew what to do with the camera. But I guess to that point, hadn't really invested into, you know, looking into or understanding or learning other parts of the business game. You know, as you said, there's the realities, invoicing. You know, I'm sure you've done a spreadsheet or two just for the hell of it. Is there any, I guess, studies or specific learning around that business skills you suggest people do, or is that just...
Oh, that's such a good question. And I probably haven't really thought about that, because I guess that some of the skills that I had previous to, you know, photography... One of the best things I think is that I did come from a pretty corporate like business background, in especially with the marketing and stuff like that, is that I had my head across a lot of that sort of stuff. I think basic kind of accounting, invoicing stuff, and like there's some really great, like I use FreshBooks, which I think is just a really great account, is, you know, QuickBooks, or there's other different ones that are just a really good way of being able to see exactly where you are at any point. I think that's really important, because it's you don't want to forget about invoices or who owes stuff, or, you know, you can use spreadsheets, but I just find this way, way easier, and way easier to input your expenses, way easier when it's, you know, time to do BAS. It's just all, you've already done it. So, yeah, definitely getting some like kind of basic accounting software, I think, would be definitely good advice.
And I imagine the smartphone is obviously enabled so much, I guess, better resources for people literally in the palm of their hand through different applications and software programs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're so lucky that we live, you know, in a time that we do have all of these resources. It would have been a lot trickier to do this, you know, even 10 years ago, I think 20 years ago. We do have a lot of those resources that we need. So I think that's probably the most important thing. The other thing that I think people really struggle with is like time management. And again, it's really hard thing to teach. Like, how do you be self-motivated, or how do you, what worked for me when I first started is having a studio space that I would go to work to every day. So I started at a studio space. I've still got the same space, and it's been, I think, 9 years. But I tried to work from home from the first maybe like 6 months. And what I found is, because my husband works from home, I found at that time it just wasn't working. We were both, we had our house was different than where we are now. We were kind of on top of each other, and it was just hard to get that separation, that work-life balance separation. So I actually chose to rent out a studio that I would go to every day to do work. And up until probably like November last year, I was doing that really, really consistently. Since I got back from tour, I've started working from home more, because I was away for so long, and I am enjoying actually being home. We live in a house that's like a four-story townhouse. So like Jarvis is on the bottom floor, and then the second floor is where we sleep. And then this is the, I guess, living room. So I've got like a space here in the corner that I've set up. And I actually really enjoy working from home at the moment. But also I am very, very self-motivated. I am very driven by deadlines and clients and what they need, and being able to meet those deadlines, doesn't matter kind of how late I need to work or whatever. So I think time management's really important. I'm huge on making lists. I love ticking off lists. So every day I write a list of what I need to do, and I just love that. And it's like, you know, actual paper and pen, analog, tick it off. It feels good when you're like ticking that stuff. So yeah, they're little tips that I work for me that I really like.
Let's talk about time. And I don't need to know the exact minute, but rough pie chart percentage wise, how much is shooting versus editing versus business in what you do? And I don't know if that three part pie chart is enough to sort of sum it up, but you can feel free to make off more slices if you want.
I guess, well, then there's also like time for yourself and stuff like that. That's really important, I think, as a creative, but it depends on the project, to be honest. So it depends on whether it's, you know, a press shot shoot that I've done in a studio, or if it's, you know, a live shoot, or if it's on tour. Because, you know, on tour, you're kind of working like, I probably work, I don't know. Well, you're kind of always on, because I'm documenting stuff, even though it doesn't feel like, often it just feels like you're hanging out, but I've always got a camera on me. So the actual show is an hour, and I was getting my editing time down while I was on tour to under an hour. So I could turn around photos really fast and have them available the next morning. So that's a super quick turnaround. That's like lightning speed getting, you know, I might take 1,000 photos of a show, going through 1,000 photos really, really quickly, picking out the great ones, color grading, uploading them to Dropbox. That was taking me an hour. So that's
practice and muscle memory that's got you to that point, right?
That's just like, that's repetition. That's just like, you know, doing that so many times that you can do it in your sleep. When I'm doing, like press shot shoot, it depends on kind of what package they book me for. I usually do 2 hours or a half day, which is like 4 hours, or sometimes a full day. So if it's, you know, say half day, which is most probably common, that's 4 hours of shooting, but then you've got like set up time, pack down time. So usually, you know, a whole day can go, you know, on one kind of shoot between what you're doing for that particular client. And then with the edit, I do a proofing system. So like I go through all the photos and pick out the ones that I feel like are usable, like anything that I'm personally happy with being out in the world. And I send them, I've got a proofing system on my website, which is, I use Format, which is incredible. And they've got like at the back end, actually a proofing system that you can upload just low res proofs that the client can click through and they can favorite them at their end. So then I can see which ones they're favorited. So yeah, that process would probably take maybe another half day just to go through everything, color grade them, upload them to the system. And then once they've picked their finals, and it depends on the package again, let's say they've picked 20 finals, that's the retouching process. And that depends on how much retouching is needed, but that potentially might be between an hour or another half day. Yeah.
And do you do all that yourself now, or do you ever pass that on to a third party?
I do all that myself. It's still like, I find that very much part of my style, if that makes sense. Like, I think there's definitely people that, can outsource that stuff. And I actually really enjoy it as well. If it was work that I didn't enjoy, maybe I would consider outsourcing. I really, really enjoy retouching. I enjoy color grading. I enjoy that whole process. So at this stage, it's not something that I would, want to give up to anybody else. There's definitely, I know definitely a lot of wedding photographers. I'm not shooting a lot of weddings anymore, but, you know, people that are shooting 60 weddings a year definitely outsource all of their editing because it's just, the volume is just too much, you know. But for what I'm doing, you know, I might only do 2 or 3 press shots a week, maybe 4. I just have to make sure I allow enough time in between. That's the thing that's hard to balance sometimes, is if your bookings are so crazy, people are wanting to book you every day, or you don't have those days in between to do, you know. So that's what I've had to become better at, and actually just push people for, you know, I can't shoot with you for another 2 weeks or whatever, because I need those days in between to be able to deliver to clients.
No, yeah. I completely understand. So project to project, sometimes 28 hours a day, sometimes less.
Understand. But honestly, like, I feel like the work-life balance, especially in the last couple of years, I've really got that balance pretty down pat.
You got to do the hard yards in the early days. That's the other thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, and the other thing is too, is like, I can charge more for my services now, which means I'm not having to do every single little job. I can say no to stuff, or I can price myself out of people that can't afford me. And that's, I'm actually really comfortable with that now. I'm like, this is what I am. I'm not worried about people saying no. It just means that I have more time for myself. You know, I like to go to the gym every day. I don't usually start my day until probably like 11 o'clock.
Sounds like a dream job straight away to some people.
Yeah, totally. So, but then, you know, you can be working really late. So if you've got gigs, you know, I might be editing until 2 o'clock in the morning. So it does balance out. I don't have any consistency. There's no one day that's the same. That's the really hard thing, is that people like always want to do, you know, work experience and stuff. And I'm like, I have no idea how you could do that in a structured format, because my days are so wildly all over the place. So that's the other reason that I'm really passionate about starting to do some live streaming or teaching that way, is it's just not really possible to do it in the current kind of school situation where you go, oh, we need to do a week of work experience. You know, it's not possible.
We talked a lot about, I guess, the straight up bulk of what you do around gig and personality photography and artist photography. You've also built, quite a repertoire now of other projects that you've worked on. You mentioned your first book, Rise, You've went on to do, you know, different exhibitions and shows of your photography, and one that I'd really love you to talk about and sort of introduce is the project that you did called Her Sound, Her Story, and kind of what that bulk of work and what that project was. And then the real interesting thing I'd love to get an insight on is, you know, being a photographer and having, you know, a full-time job there, how do you branch out and how do you look for other opportunities and other activities to invest your time in?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually can't believe I haven't touched on that yet because it was such a major part of my life for so long. So I started the project called Her Sound, Her Story, just after I finished Rise, probably about 6 months after I finished Rise. I was looking at my portfolio and I was like, holy shit, it's a dude fest. Like, it's just all guys. I've only worked, and it wasn't a conscious thing. It was just like, I was in the hip hop scene. The majority of people that were making music in hip hop at that time were men. Yep. They're also all my friends. Like, I'm very comfortable in that scene, and it hadn't even really crossed my mind. And at the same time, it was the same time that a lot of statistics were coming out about gender disparity in kind of everything, but I was, you know, obviously honing in on music. So, you know, Triple J Hottest 100 statistics would come out and there'd be this huge gender disparity. This was like 2015. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, why? This is music. This is not like engineering. You know, it's not something that you would think that would have a gender disparity because, you know, naturally there's people that are more interested in certain things, I guess, with music. And also too, when I started looking at the statistics of who was studying music, it's 50-50. So there's actually no argument to say that women aren't interested in music. They absolutely are. They were studying music, but what happened is that when it came to time to actually producing and putting that music out, so people that were registered with APRA, there's this huge drop-off.
Wow.
And it drops off to about 20%. 20% of the total denomination of people that are making music are women. And I was just like, what is going on? This is wild to me. Like, it's there's something happening. Everyone was talking about the fact that there was a gap, but no one was actually talking about why.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, that kind of sparked my interest in doing. Originally it was going to be a personal project again because I'm a photographer. I was like, okay, well, I want to shine a light on women. I want, because that's what I did with Rise. With Rise, I was like, okay, no one's talking about Australian hip hop. I want to shine a light on Australian hip hop. So originally it was going to be like, okay, I want to shine a light on these women. Like, this, I know that there's incredible female artists in this country. Like, we just need to get them more attention. And then I'm like, no, it's actually bigger than a photography project. I feel like we actually need to talk to the women. We need to understand what's happening here. Yeah. So at that stage, I asked my filmmaker friend, Claudia, to come on board. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a photo shoot. And then at the end of the photo shoot, we were just going to sit down and have a conversation. And I had kind of floated the word documentary, like, let's do a documentary, not really knowing what that meant. But that ended up being kind of a four-year journey of going on to produce a documentary, and it ended up being an 88 series, a portrait series that we did an exhibition. It's now in the National Sound and Film Archives. And we also have a documentary, which is, pretty amazing.
And I would assume that this would all, you know, get started and actually get completed, because not only, I guess is it a job, but it is a passion project. It's something that you're critically interested in and probably build interest over time as well. But you actually had to, complete this and achieve this goal of yours and get through it all. And I'm sure it wasn't easy. You have to almost go back to, I guess how it's obviously a critical part of it. If someone's out there thinking, I want to achieve something, I want to do a documentary, they need to have that purpose and the why and the passion there.
I think the purpose and the why is the most important thing. We had never done anything like that before, either Claudia or myself. We couldn't get any funding because how film funding works in Australia is that you need to have done two or three before they'll give you funding. So we couldn't get funding. No, nobody really, we tried, but I think we didn't even really know what we were doing or what it was going to look like. So it was hard for us to even pitch it because we didn't really know ourselves. So, and we just went along and just did 50 interviews with, you know, different women, and then made the thing ourselves. And we did everything, like every little thing that you know, when you see a documentary, the credits rolling at the end and there's like 100 names, like we just did all of the things, like every single little thing. And a lot of that was Claudia having so many incredible skills in the video, you know, the actual film production side of things, and being able to do things like animation and being able to direct and edit and be, you know, she had so many incredible skills in that. But, you know, we did all the filming, we did all the sound, we did all the interviews, we did all of the photo shoots that were attached to the animation stuff. You know, we had to clear all of the songs, like all the stuff that licensing that we had no idea about, like so much work, so many times we wanted to quit, so many tears, yeah. So many times it's like, what, why are we doing this? What purpose, you know, what just, I think the main thing is though, is once it was released and it had such incredible impact in our industry, it definitely made it all worth it. So it's worth it if you put the hard yards in, but it's so impossible to even quantify to people that haven't done a project like this. Like, so we both have, you know, our businesses that are running full time and we're doing a documentary on top of it. Like we would be up talking to each other, usually over Facebook chat, just about all the different things that we had to do, you know, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. We also ran a concert when we launched it, an exhibition, like that's all right. Of that stuff, logistics, we did ourselves. Like, you know, we essentially wore every single hat, like event manager, booking agent, travel agent, like everything. And a lot of people were just like, how the hell did you do this? But
you got to achieve.
I don't know. When you put your mind to something, it's actually pretty amazing what you can achieve. And that's definitely one thing that's I've learned is like you can do stuff if you put the hard yards in. So, you know, a lot of people, you know, you definitely need to get your breaks along the way and you know, meet certain people that can help you with certain things. But like the buck stops with you at the end of the day. Like,
yeah,
you've put the hours in.
And yeah, and it can't always be adrenaline or it can't always be excitement. I imagine that gets you through some of those days or hours. So.
Well, with Claudia and I, it was like the balance of like if one person was really low, picking the other person up, or if, you know, Claudia's, you know, a mess of tears, then being able to say, you know, we need to keep going, this is worth it, and vice versa. And my husband was incredible. Again, he has made documentaries before, so he was really helpful in certain aspects of making us see things a certain way or just being able to help with advice. But essentially it was just the two of us. So I feel like a lot of people, it's really hard again to teach this stuff or to really communicate how many hours or how much work this is. Like I don't think there's anything that you can do to actually communicate it until you've done a project like this. It's just, I don't have the words.
And it's
just,
and it's
hours and hours.
And it's gritty as well. And I'd ask, like, how does someone see that film now? Because I think one thing that really does come out of it is the hours and hours of work you put in. You know, there's a lot of interviews in there. There's some real, you know, I guess truthful footage where you can see that, you know, you and Claudia have spent time on this, let alone the actual time and the effort and the work that the artists that you're communicating with and showcasing have as well. And I think it's a really critical watch, not only just because of the, you know, gender equality situation and obviously being super timely coming out, I think, just before the whole Me Too movement as well, right?
Like It came out 2 months after the Me Too movement launched. It was actually wild, the timing. So it was at a, it was actually at a point that I felt like people were ready to listen to women's stories. It's such a beautiful documentary. It is very moving. It's not depressing. It's actually quite uplifting. It's quite inspiring. Everybody that's seen it feels like they feel so motivated after it. And yeah, you, so you can watch it on Vimeo on demand. That's the streaming service that we've put it up. So you can rent or buy it, you know, just like any other film. And yeah, we're both really proud of it. It was, I mean, the flip side of it, it's been really great for our careers outside of, you know, what we've done with the film. You know, Claudia's got so much music video work out of that, and I've got so much photography work out of it because people know who we are. We became kind of like the voices for gender equality in music for a while. Like, we were on all the panels and we were, you know, really visible as just not photographers and filmmakers, but actual women within the music industry with a voice. And it was really great for our personal kind of identities, and I don't like to use the word brand, but like, you know, so people knew who we were, and which is always really great for your business as well. So that's like it's not something that we thought about at the start, but I guess that was a benefit that came outside of having a project that was so, so well supported, really well acknowledged. There was a lot of media coverage. So it, you know, did benefit us in that way, which was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so good. And it also showcases, you know, your diversity as an artist and a professional in your industry as well. So I do encourage everyone to go have a look at that. It's I think everyone will get something out of it. Motivation at the very least, beyond a bunch of other stuff. Look, I want to wrap this up. I really appreciate your time, Michelle. It's been super awesome. Before I let you go, I do have a question from a listener. We do a question of the week every episode. I think this one's really interesting, actually. Especially if someone's out there thinking about making a documentary, because they don't always make you rich, as people may think or not. So this question comes from Paul, and he asks, what if my dream job doesn't pay the bills?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay, so my dream job definitely didn't pay the bills for a long time. Like, it was, like I said, even though I went professional, it doesn't mean I was earning a overly professional wage for a long time. What I firmly believe in is if you put the hours in and you genuinely love what you do and people can see that passion comes through, it will eventually turn into something that does pay the bills. I really believe that. Unfortunately, what happens is, like, the reality of the hours that you do need to put into the dream job can sometimes be so overwhelming that you need to do it, have a day job or whatever. The day job actually is just distracting you from reaching your potential in your dream job. So where it's possible, I've always just said, put as much time as you absolutely can into what you want to do. Because the sooner that you can do that, the sooner the payoff's going to come at the other end. Obviously, with life and situations, that's not always possible, but doing it as much as you can, not just being like, oh yeah, well, I like to shoot concerts, so I'm going to go shoot one concert a week. That's not going to work. I'm sorry. it's hard yards. It's hours. It's the reality. And a lot of people don't want to hear that. They just want to, you know, they want to say, oh yeah, I can do that. I see that Michelle's doing that, and I want to work with an artist like Rule. And it's like, well, that's, you know, that's 10 years work prior that you've seen before I've worked with an artist like Rule. So it's quite important that, you know, those honing your skills, making the contacts, putting the time into your business, all of that stuff is really, really, really imperative. But I do think it's possible. It's just like, you know, the 10,000 hour thing, it's just true, unfortunately.
Awesome, Michelle. Really appreciate it. And Paul, I wish you luck, mate. I don't know, you didn't say what he's doing, but flick us a message and let us know what your project is. I wish you the best. Hey, thanks again so much, Michelle. I really appreciate having you on Dream Job Ready. You've been awesome.
My pleasure.
Good luck in isolation, and we look forward to tuning in on Twitch and seeing some lessons from you.
Oh, yes. And my Twitch channel is the same as my Instagram and my Twitter, which is just Michelle G. Hunder, and it's Hunder with a D, H-U-N-D-E-R. So all of my socials are the same. So you can find me and come and pop in on one of my streams.
100%. Learn some stuff. Awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Cool. Thank you so much.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.